On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the news this week, a forced retreat. Wolfowitz is out at the World Bank.
The near mutiny at the World Bank and huge international pressure proved impossible to withstand.
The hunt for three captured U.S. soldiers in Iraq goes big and deep.
We are doing everything we can to locate our soldiers.
And did Alberto Gonzalez strong-arm a critically ill John Ashcroft? Amazing details of a hospital showdown.
I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man who did not have the powers of the Attorney General because they had been transferred to me.
We have a great panel with us today from Washington, Linda Douglas, former chief Capitol Hill correspondent for ABC News, now a fellow at Harvard's Shorenstein Center. Linda, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
From Dallas, William McKenzie, editorial page editor for the Dallas Morning News. Bill, great to have you with us again. Hello, Bill McKenzie. Are you there, my friend? We'll get Bill. And with us from New Hampshire, Jack Beatty, On Point news analyst and senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Linda.
We'll get Dallas on the line, but let's dive straight in here. The big news off the big meeting yesterday on immigration. Linda Douglas, what do you make of this? It's big. It's back. Is this the solution?
Well, this is an extraordinary development because it's been unfolding for several years. When you look back, President Bush came into office, former governor of Texas, proposing comprehensive immigration reform that would have provided a path to citizenship for the 12 million illegal immigrants, there weren't that many when he took office, who are already in this country. That was met ferocious resistance among conservative Republicans, a minority in the country, but a very vocal, passionate minority who wanted to send people back to the countries they came from, who wanted border enforcement, but absolutely no path to citizenship. What you see now is an extraordinary effort to try to mollify all forces. This is a much tougher bill in terms of its impact on illegal immigrants' lives than you would have seen when President Bush first took office.
Tougher bill, a bill that can pass. Bill McKenzie, how do you see the environment out there? They've got Kyle of Arizona, the big critic of illegal immigration, on board with this. Does that mean that the politics and the policy have changed in such a way that it has a chance this time?
Well, you're right. Kyle changes the dynamic, and that means the bill, as Linda said, is going to be more conservative, at least in the Senate. I happen to think this is a very important breakthrough. I'm not wild about all the parts about the temporary worker and have some questions about the green cards, but it gets Kyle to the table, and Kyle can bring along some other votes, and specifically, he can bring along some other votes for the pathway to citizenship for the estimated 12 million illegal immigrants who are living here now. And that is a big deal. I mean, there is a real question as to whether last year's Senate immigration bill could have ever made it through a conference committee with the House. By having Kyle on board now, I think you probably increase the chances for some sort of compromise. You know, as Pelosi has said, she wants 70 Democrats in the House. It's hard, 70 Republicans in the House on the bill. If you want 70 House Republicans, they're going to have to be a little bit more conservative.
They're starting with Kennedy and Kyle. Here's Senator Edward Kennedy yesterday. He was the Democrats' chief negotiator, talking about the package that's been hammered out, not with a vote yet, but at least a kind of bipartisan leadership position here.
Politics is the art of the possible, and the agreement we just reached is the best possible chance we will have in years to secure our borders, bring millions of people out of the shadows and into the sunshine of America.
Senator Lindsey Graham negotiated for the Republicans.
So this started out as a process to deal with illegal immigration. I think we've got a bill that reflects who we are as Americans. And the people who will get to participate in this program will get a chance to be American on our terms, not theirs.
And here's President Bush. He's pushed a long time for immigration reform, had this to say.
Immigration is a tough issue for a lot of Americans. The agreement reached today is one that'll help enforce our borders, but equally importantly, it'll treat people with respect. This is a bill where people who live here in our country will be treated without amnesty, but without animosity.
Nice turn of phrase, but of course, Jack Beatty, many conservatives still saying, what do you mean? This is amnesty.
Well, it amounts to something like that for many of these people. They're going to have to pay a very stiff fine. They're going to have to return sometime in the period they're here to a touchback to their country of origin, and then come back here. And they're going to have to go to the end of the line to become formal citizens. What really worries me here, what looks like brought this deal together, is a trade-off. The trade-off was, all right, we'll bring the illegals out of the shadow, but in return, I think the business interest here asked for an increase in the guest worker program from 200,000 a year, which was in the original bill last year, to 600,000 a year. And I think that was what brought the Republican senators over. This means more guest workers coming into the country every year. And John Sweeney of the AFL-CIO is, I think, rightly against this as something that essentially will bid down American wages and health benefits and safety procedures as this guest worker program goes on.
John Sweeney is saying this will ensure that America has two classes of workers, only one of which can exercise workplace rights. But Linda Douglas, there's another big change in here on the family reunification front. This makes it harder just to bring on Ma, Pa, the kids, and the cousins. Standards here on education and talent. What particular immigrants might bring to this country? That's a historic shift for the United States.
Absolutely. And that really is the most important new change in this bill. I just want to go back for a moment to the guest worker provision, because Jack is absolutely right. This is a major victory for the business community, which has been fighting hard and supported by the Bush administration for some method of bringing illegal immigrant workers, that is the workers who will work for less and who've been working here illegally, legally into this country to do the work that many Americans won't do. This is the backbreaking work out in the agricultural fields. This is the work in the meatpacking plants, some of the work on construction sites that contractors have been finding more difficult to fill with American workers. This is an enormous increase in the number of these workers, and this battle has been for the last 2 years a battle within the Republican Party, that is, those who don't want any more immigration from Latin American countries, people who are willing to work for low wages, the conservatives who voted for no path,
right,
and the business community, another faction of the Republican Party, which again is victorious here. Those workers who come in as temporary workers will not be given a path to citizenship, will not be given a path to legality. And that's one of the things that is raising concerns among labor unions, as Jack mentioned, and also immigrant right groups. And secondly, as you point out, now no longer will it be the case that if you are a relative of somebody who is already here, has managed to find his or her way into this country, that you will automatically be given a preference. Now immigration choices that will be made by our government, that is, who gets into this country, will be based much more on whether you speak English, what kind of finances you have, what your skills are. A secondary consideration will be your family ties, and that is raising great concerns in the immigrant community.
Bill McKenzie, if there's
a
front line anywhere,
second?
You're on it. Yeah, how do you read the politics
of this? I'm going to jump in against both of them on the 400,000 temporary workers a year. And it's 400,000 a year that they're talking about,
right?
Not 600,000.
Okay.
And one point here, last year's bill in the Senate started out with 400,000, and only at the last minute did it go down to 200,000 when Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico introduced an amendment that kind of surprised a lot of people. So everybody was always talking about 400,000, so we're back to 400,000 now. Why is that figure important? It is important because we have an estimated 400,000 people who are coming here illegally each year. If we don't have enough visas to match that flow of workers, we're going to continue to have a problem with illegal immigration. So that's why that 400,000 figure is important. I don't think it's just a big business bugaboo. I think it is trying to match reality. And if we don't match reality, we're not going to stem the flow of future illegal
immigrants.
But
who's to say we won't still have 400,000 coming from Mexico and another 400,000 from Bulgaria and Thailand and the Philippines and name it?
Well, so far, but it's a supply and demand thing. We don't have that now. We don't have those numbers from Bulgaria. What we have had pretty much is about 400,000 coming from Central Latin America and Mexico. And that's where the demand is, or the supply is coming from.
We've got a lot on our plate here. Linda Douglas, let's turn to Paul Wolfowitz. He is now out. The White House said, no, 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 we're going to stick by him. He said, no, I'm hanging in. Now, no, he's gone into June.
Well, and this was, again, an extraordinary turn of events within the Bush administration, because President Bush is famously loyal to the aides of his who and associates of his who come under fire politically. And this is, of course, a tale, as we all now know so well, of the very controversial but talented Paul Wolfowitz coming into the World Bank with many resenting his presence there to begin with, because he was seen as one of the architects of the Iraq War. And then during the negotiations over his arrangements within the World Bank, made an arrangement to move his girlfriend, as she has been called, and she much objects to that term, very
long-time companion.
That's right, long-time companion, and a qualified internationalist on her own right, from the World Bank, with a big increase in salary and an unusual portfolio. And this then was perceived by the bank to have involved a lot of corner-cutting and violation of ethics rules. Finally, Wolfowitz steps down, not having admitted that he did anything wrong, but to the great satisfaction of all the other countries who were rooting for him to leave for that reason and many other reasons as well.
We're looking at a week in the news this hour with Wolfowitz out, an immigration deal on the table, a war czar named, and more. Linda Douglas is with us, longtime chief Capitol Hill correspondent for ABC News. Bill McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News is here. Jack Beatty's here as well. You can join us. Is this the immigration bill you've been waiting for or not? And how about those Republican candidates in debate again? Can Giuliani defend abortion and win? Can Romney want more Guantanamo waterboardings and win? And then what about those wild tales of Gonzalez and Andy Card apparently strong-arming, or trying to, John Ashcroft in his hospital bed to sign off on wiretaps? Linda, Bill, Jack, I want to get a little bit of that James Comey testimony on the table here. It was quite amazing. Tuesday, he's talking about the secret surveillance program, domestic wiretapping. The former deputy attorney general under John Ashcroft sat down with the Senate Judiciary Committee and talked about a hospital showdown between Ashcroft and then White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez and chief of staff Andrew Card. Comey told lawmakers he and Ashcroft had agreed that the president's program should not be reauthorized. That same day, Ashcroft was hospitalized with acute pancreatitis. Comey stepped in as acting attorney general. He said that Card and Gonzalez went to Ashcroft's hospital room in intensive care to get him to change his mind.
The door opened and in walked Mr. Gonzalez carrying an envelope and Mr. Card. They came over and stood by the bed, greeted the attorney general very briefly, and then Mr. Gonzalez began to discuss why they were there, to seek his approval for a matter, and explain what the matter was, which I will not do. And Attorney General Ashcroft then stunned me. He lifted his head off the pillow and in very strong terms expressed his view of the matter, rich in both substance and fact, which stunned me, drawn from the hour-long meeting we'd had a week earlier, and in very strong terms expressed himself, and then laid his head back down on the pillow, seemed spent, and said to them, "But that doesn't matter because I'm not the Attorney General."
And on it went. This tale unfolded, everybody just listening, as though Hollywood was on display here with some kind of dark thriller. But this is our actual history and recent history. Bill McKenzie, your editorial page, maybe not, I don't know if you write it, but the headline in response was, "Hospital Shakedown, Disgraceful Tales Speaks Volumes About Gonzalez."
Well, okay. I didn't write it, but I do think it's time for Gonzalez to go. I will say one thing. Wouldn't you love to know what Ashbrook said when he raised up and whatever
Ashcroft,
he said?
Ashcroft, I must insist on this distinction, but yes, I would love to say.
I think it may have been sharper than that. Yeah. But anyway, no, Gonzalez, it's time for him to go. And I didn't rush on the Gonzalez has got to go bandwagon early on, but, you know, we now have second, third big mistakes. I've known Andy Card for 25 years. I don't think Andy Card is a dark power user, but there's no, whatever their reason it was for going that looked okay to them, it's just not okay. That's unconscionable to go to some guy's hospital room and try to do that. It's time to go. Bush has, 15 months, 18 months left in his administration. He doesn't need to spend one more day trying to defend or waste time trying to defend people like Gonzalez. And I'd even say the same with Wolfowitz. You know, you need a clean slate. You need to be focused on passing things like this immigration bill.
So we've got a no-confidence vote coming, Linda, from Democrats here, but of course that has no legal bearing. Do you see the president sticking with this or jettisoning Gonzalez?
Well, you have to wonder what the tipping point can possibly be now, because as part of this tale, former Attorney General Ashcroft at that time and Comey, his deputy, and others almost resigned. There was almost a mass resignation at the Justice Department in reaction to the White House trying to circumvent the Justice Department and take advantage of a semi-conscious Attorney General to get its way on its wiretapping program. The no-confidence vote is just a way to finally showcase once again what has been a series of events around Attorney General Gonzalez, the allegations that go on and on, investigations continue into whether or not attorneys at the Justice Department were hired and fired based upon their loyalty to the Bush administration agenda, all kinds of internal suggestions that the White House and its views took precedence over Justice Department policy. There was a moment in that hearing where Arlen Specter, Republican senator on the Judiciary Committee,
yes,
who has come very close now to calling for Gonzalez's resignation, asked James Comey, is there anything that you can cite that shows an example of Gonzalez's good judgment? And then Specter says, let the record show there was a very long pause.
yes, Jack.
But you know, I mean, Card and Gonzalez were acting for Bush. Comey said part of his recollection was it was the president who called the attorney general and said to expect his minions over there. And, you know, The Washington Post today in an editorial, and The Washington Post has been very sort of equitable about this whole attorney, you know, U.S. attorney scandal. Their headline is, what did Bush know and when? Well, we know what that echoes. That echoes Watergate. And, you know, the question, you know, was the president, in other words, what was this program that the president was implementing that the Justice Department, the officials were ready to resign in protest over?
But we
was
know.
It just what we know, or was it something much more ambitious than what we know? And you know, has it been covered up? Again, we don't know, but the ominous footfall there of that headline is significant because, you know, many people think that the illegal wiretaps, what we know already, constitute an impeachable offense by Mr. Bush. And does this other, is there another program here we don't know about?
Bill McKenzie, you've been a Bush guy. You are a Bush guy. On your blog, you've been drawing distinctions here between Gonzalez and Rove and President Bush himself. What about this question?
Well, you know, Jack is right. I mean, there is a question of whether Bush was the one behind this, because at his press conference yesterday, he failed to answer the reporter's question as to whether he sent them over there. So you can make for that what you want to. But I think it is important to note that when the Justice Department then went to Bush the next day after Andy Card went to the hospital, Bush gave them the changes they wanted. We don't know what those changes were, but Bush okayed those changes. I agree. You know, it's a bizarre-looking tale, but he did give them what they wanted at the end. My point is, I think there has been a dark side that has run through the administration. We've seen it in this power play on the U.S. attorneys. We see it in some degree in people like Wolfowitz, and we see it in this kind of heavy-handedness going into to get Ashcroft to sign this thing. And then there is a light side, if you will, which we're trying to see, trying to work out bipartisan deals on No Child Left Behind, bipartisan deals on trade, which happened last week, which is a big breakthrough of Democrats, bipartisan on immigration. You even have had some bipartisan work on tax issues. So, you know, there is a bipartisan side. There is a, as Reinhold Niebuhr said, there's children of light and children of darkness, and we have both sides within this administration.
Linda. One thing,
yes,
about
please.
The Justice Department, though, too. Remember also that the Deputy Attorney General has also now resigned, Paul McNulty, this week. So now you have Gonzalez completely isolated. Most of the people around him have either been forced to resign or have resigned on their own. And at some point, you have to ask the question, what does the Justice Department do? What is the responsibility of that agency? And is it functioning at all?
And if the president isn't standing up to make sure it is, Bill McKenzie, what does that say about dark and light? I mean, don't we have a problem here?
I'm sorry, a problem in that Bush didn't stand up to...
Well, it's his attorney general, as has been famously said, serves at the pleasure of the president. With all this, what reason
right.
can you... Can you imagine Bush
it's
standing
complicated.
Up there?
Right. I think Gonzalez needs to go, and I think Bush needs to say, pal, you need to go out there and offer your resignation, and we need to get this over with by the end of June. But, you know, it's a complicated relationship. These guys have been together since 1995, you know, and I've known Al Gonzalez since he was Secretary of State here in Texas. So these guys have worked around each other, and people are going to say, aha, that's the problem. Well, it may be the problem, but it also speaks to the fact that there's a complicated, long-standing relationship there, and, you know, human nature, what it is, it's sometimes hard to sever those bonds. Do I think he should? Yes, but it's sometimes hard to do.
Boy, we're getting down to brass tacks here. Michael's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that I was calling to say that I think that the media has been missing much of the point of James Comey's testimony. And playing up the fact that, you know, there was this fire drill going to the hospital room, which is certainly appalling and appealing, but the real point, and this was brought out by Spector as well as others on the committee, is that the program which Comey and Ashcroft refused to sign off on was illegal, and that in fact, although one of your speakers said that changes were put into place before it was put into effect, it was in fact, according to Comey's testimony, put into place for some time before the changes were made, which did then allow the Attorney General to sign off.
Right.
And that, in fact, that the law was broken here, and that's the real story.
Well, that's what it comes down to, is how much interpretation can the president bring to bear when there's a sense of national security emergency? Linda Douglas, do you think we're going to go back to that again, or is that kind of settled, at least politically, on Capitol Hill? Are we going to open up the whole wiretapping story again, or is that sort of riding in the dust of the firings of the U.S. attorneys around the country and all the rest now?
I think there will be no choice but to open it up again because of the very questions that we're hearing raised just as we sit here talking among ourselves and as Michael has raised and people who are paying attention to this out there in the country will be raising. The Democrats have been asking many questions on many fronts about the Bush administration now that they finally have power. They have been calling officials before committees, and they've been subpoenaing testimony on a variety of fronts, many of them having to do with Iraq, but also having to do with regulatory agencies and other questions that have been raised, the use of science by the administration, and so far. One has to wonder if Democrats are going to be wary about opening another front in its investigations of how the Bush administration has handled its power. But this one seems to, as I mentioned earlier, have no choice. And also there are Republicans who have long been concerned about what that wiretapping program is, who it is used upon, and what its authorization is.
Of course, security issues also in the GOP debates this week. We had the candidates given this hypothetical scenario. GOP candidates in South Carolina, terrorists have attacked the U.S. Some with knowledge of another attack has been captured, taken to Guantanamo. All the candidates were asked, would they use torture at Guantanamo to get information out of those hypothetical terrorists? Talk about security. Here's Senator John McCain.
We could never gain as much we would gain from that torture as we lose in world opinion. We do not torture people. When I was in Vietnam, one of the things that sustained us as we underwent torture ourselves is the knowledge that if we had our positions reversed and we were the captors, we would not impose that kind of treatment on them. It's not about the terrorists. It's about us. It's about what kind of country we are.
Jack Beatty, these security issues roll forward, and you hear it right there already in the Republican debates for 08.
You do, and unfortunately, that statement by Senator McCain with its unanswerable authenticity, I'm the man, I suffered, I was there, was not applauded, whereas the comments of Rudy Giuliani and Mitt Romney that they needed to get tough, that they would go to the limit, that they would do whatever they could within permissible limits, we know what that wink is, to get that information, that got applause. That was very disturbing, and it came on a a day, you know, when the Washington Post published an article by General Krulak, former commandant of the Marines, and General Hoare, former commandant of the Central Command, who basically said torture doesn't work, and it's a false security, but it's also an abuse that, as they put it, spreads like wildfire. That once the soldier out there on the field knows that the commander-in-chief has winked at torture, which the torture memo of Gonzales was a couple of years ago, that spreads down into the ranks. And there was that troubling survey that found that something like a third of soldiers or Marines in Iraq believe that torture was permissible. Well, where did they get that idea, if not from the very top? And then General Petraeus, someone actually quoted him as saying torture of the enemy actually helps the enemy. It gives them propaganda to recruit. And it's not only counterproductive in the instant, the person tortured doesn't tell you the truth, it's also strategically counterproductive.
But that is hardly a settled issue. I want to listen to one more piece of tape, and I'll come to you, Bill. But from that same Republican debate, you had former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney making very sure he was seen as being tough on terrorists.
I want them in Guantanamo when they don't get the access to lawyers they get when they're on our soil. I don't want them in our prisons. I want them there. Some people have said we ought to close Guantanamo. My view is we ought to double Guantanamo. We ought to make sure that the terrorists... And there's no question but that in a setting like that, where you have the ticking bomb, that the President of the United States, not the CIA interrogator, the President of the United States has to make the call, and enhanced interrogation techniques have to be used, not torture, but enhanced interrogation techniques. Yes.
Enhanced interrogation techniques, and that you just thought to mean waterboarding near drowning. Bill McKenzie, what about it? You've got generals saying, don't do this. You've got Romney saying, double Guantanamo.
Right. Well, I don't think we should double it, and I'm not a waterboarding fan, and I'm sorry about the torture memos and Gonzales wrote. I'm going to argue something, though, that may kind of get me laughed off of here. I don't think Bush's desire for these tools comes from some Nixon-like desire for power to go stick it to somebody. I think it comes from everything that happened on 9/11 and from what people I've talked to who know him well and have known him here since he was here, and say that is the one thing that has changed about this guy. And it happened on 9/11. You remember that scene when he's flying back into D.C. and he looks down and the Pentagon's burning and he tells his friends, this is our new world. We're at war. I think he personalized 9/11. And I've written this in a column. Mm. I think that's one of the three most serious mistakes he has made. But he feels personally that he needs to stop us from the next terror attack. And we may not like the tools he's using, but I would argue that's not necessarily a bad instinct or a bad impulse.
But what if it's not evil, Bill, but kind of obliviousness to the knock-on effect, to the problems it produces that these generals are now pointing to?
Right. Well, he's getting pushback. And, like the pushback he got from Comey, he then went and changed the rules that they were hoping he would change. Mm. And so, when there's been some pushback on other issues dealing with war on terrorism, sometimes he agrees with the pushback. But the point is, I think it's coming from where he wants to try to stop the next attack, and he wants tools.
Let's go to Lake Mills, Iowa, and Nate. Nate, you're on the air.
Hey.
What do you think, Nate?
I wanted to make a comment on the torture issue. I am in the National Guard myself, and they make special notes of weapons that are usable in certain situations and weapons that are not, as far as things that are inhumane, and they specifically mention that torture is not permissible in our training. And I know just recently I heard on NPR a program talking about torture's use in the popular media, like The Shield and the TV show 24 as well.
Yeah,
and how it was shown in The Shield, the main character actually wound up killing the wrong man.
So you could end up there. You're in the National Guard, Nate, if it were you on the line. If that question were put to you, you're the National Guardsman. Do you feel firmly prohibited from using torture or not?
Well, not just as a National Guard member and a representative of the United States, but also as a Christian, I feel that it would be very immoral to torture someone for any reason.
Nate, thanks for that. Linda Douglas, you've got Jack Bauer on the table in 24 and our president and our country, and so does Nate.
Jack Bauer, remember, is a very, very popular figure if you look at the ratings for 24. But what I was really going to say is this is a new Republican race in which these candidates are trying to out-tough each other and trying to appeal to the segment of the Republican base that is most concerned about getting even with the terrorists, about being as tough as it takes. And if I can broaden this out just a little bit, it certainly seems to be an effort by Giuliani to focus on that issue and economic issues as well, but mostly the toughness issue, the I'll keep you safe issue versus socially conservative questions such as abortion, stem cell research, and so forth. There are three parts of the Republican base: the economic conservatives, the national security conservatives, the social conservatives. Giuliani is emphasizing the national security conservatives in a way that it seems to be pulling the other candidates with him.
We wonder. Let's listen to Rudy Giuliani on a couple of fronts there. That's a rich subject this week. First of all, here's Rudy Giuliani's answer to the question about what would you do with the clock ticking on terror.
I would tell the people who had to do the interrogation to use every method they could think of. Shouldn't be torture, but every method they can think of. I'd say every method they could think of, and I would support them in doing that because I've seen what can happen when you make a mistake about this, and I don't want to see another 3,000 people dead in New York or anyplace else.
There's Giuliani talking tough on terror, and at the same event, pirouetting, turning on abortion rights, and earlier as well, but to say, I'm for abortion rights.
There are people, millions and millions of Americans, who are as of good conscience as we are, who make a different choice about abortion. And I think in a country where you want to keep government out of people's lives, you have to respect that.
Bill McKenzie, here's Rudy Giuliani trying to do something difficult to have it on the security piece of the base, as Linda Douglas describes it, to bring in the economic piece, but to say to the abortion voter, the values voter, if you like that phrase, well, I've got a different position. Can that work, Bill?
Well, I think the abortion decision by Giuliani is a smart one because he never was going to get the pro-life vote because there are too many other competitors in this race for get him, and most of them knew that he was pro-choice anyway. So he ought to go straight to the pro-choice Republican vote, which is out there. I haven't seen data recently, but I know in the past at GOP conventions, a surprising number of delegates are pro-choice. So there are voters out there who will get up and support him, and he gets them. To some degree, Giuliani, is, as I listen to this, makes me think of Lieberman, who was kind of a socially moderate hawk. And so Giuliani is betting on that strategy, being the social moderate hawk. Let me go back and say, I think the torture is a mistake, and I think it's a mistake for the reasons soldiers are saying and that McCain is saying. But I think you do need a hawk who is going to a hawk of sorts who's going to be leading the country in the world we lead in. So you know, Giuliani may be able to tap into a strain within the party.
Jack, what do you see?
Well, he's a hawk, but also a bit of a demagogue. I mean, Ron Paul basically said to him, why have they attacked us? Because of our foreign policy, because of what we've done in the Middle East. And that, of course, is the line of the 9/11 Commission. It's the line of the Defense Intelligence Agency report of a year or so ago. It's what we do in the world. And what was Giuliani's comment? I don't think I've ever heard that said before, and I've heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11th. Total demagoguery, you know, pretending that what is so isn't so, so that he can get a big line. They're after us because of our freedom. I mean, we've had enough of that already, and I thought that was a very disturbing sign from Giuliani.
Let's go to Waterloo.
I'd like to just jump in here, I think it also raises an interesting question about the dynamics of the Republicans versus the Democrats in this presidential campaign, because certainly one of the questions in the wake of the Bush administration and what even Republicans would now say are frayed relations with countries around the world, there's going to be a battle for what kind of face America wants to present to the world. Mm-hmm. And it seems as though the Republican primary candidates at this point are trying to craft a very tough image. And it seems that at least some of the Democrats, if you think about what Barack Obama is saying, are trying to craft a more internationalist view of America. And it'll be very interesting to watch those two messages compete in the general campaign, if that's how it turns out.
To see which the American public goes for, let's hear from that public in Waterloo, Iowa. Karen, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom, for taking the call. No. I have 2 points now, and I'll take my comments off the air. The first one is with regard to torture. We're currently looking for 3 American soldiers, and the most horrific thought that enters my mind is that those 3 individuals are going to be paying a price for something they didn't do. They might well come back to us mutilated and tortured, and the thought is horrific to me, like the Gaslight. You can't treat people with disrespect and inhumanity and expect to be treated any differently. And secondly, with regard to the current administration and the corruption, we learned this morning on NPR that the Bush administration, through its cronyism, had pumps put into the levees in New Orleans that were faulty. They hired a close relationship of Bush for that. We've seen the tapping. We've seen the Gonzalez issues. Our Justice Department is, nobody even knows what they're doing. And I think it's time. This is our country. We've heard about the power of this administration. It's our country. I think that it's time that those leaders that we have put into office stand up and take it back for us. I think that impeachment for Bush and Cheney is something that needs to be looked at. Dennis Kucinich was not far off base, even though not one of those Democratic candidates backed him at the debate, the first debate.
Karen, impeachment's a big step. We've got an election just around the corner. Why not wait for the ballot box?
I think it's not just around the corner. It's 15 months away. That's a long time. Look at what they've done thus far. And I think it's time we stopped worrying about the next election and started worrying about the here and now and took care of business.
Karen, we've got it loud and clear, and we thank you for your call. Let me get another one right here as well from Milton, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Good day. How are you?
Very well.
Question. I hate to sound like grassy knoll theorist here, but maybe there is a knoll if it's not grassy. With regard to the Ashcroft Hospitalization Act and the wiretapping, I'm wondering if there is a line that can be drawn between the implementation of those wiretaps and what we don't know and the attempted firing of the U.S. attorneys. Was the Bush administration trying to implement a greater program and wanted their own henchmen as U.S. attorneys to implement what they said?
Of course, the U.S. attorneys are out in the field, whereas those policies are made back in Washington. But, Bill McKenzie, we did see this week, Washington Post reporting, that not just 8 or 9, but maybe 30 U.S. attorneys had their names on a list of people targeted maybe to go.
Right. Well, I think the caller raised a point that the Bush people should consider. And this power politics that we were talking about earlier, what that does, it leads to conspiracy thinking among people like the caller there who will start trying to connect the dots and saying, look, they're doing this, 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 and this, and this. And I think that, you know, from the Bush administration perspective, they're barring trouble by keeping people like Gonzalez in place. You know, they're allowing the conspiracy theories to kind of proliferate and people just start piling on and piling on and piling on and they borrow trouble.
But
that makes sense.
Yes, I understand that dynamic. On the other hand, these are revelations. These are actual facts coming out about the bigger list, Linda. So, you know, it's not just conspiracy theories, I suppose. The hearings are beginning to put more in the light on the table.
Well, it's hard to say where this will stop, actually. There certainly is no evidence that, as you just pointed out, Tom, that the U.S. attorneys who are out in the field had any involvement in the development of the wiretapping policy, the details of which we still don't know. But it does seem that as the decisions to fire U.S. attorneys, as the details of those decisions become known, as the names on the list become known and the list seems to grow longer as to who was considered to be fired, we begin to see that there were people who were considered not loyal to the Bush administration agenda. There were people who were not investigating claims of election fraud that those U.S. attorneys didn't think really held up. There is Monica Goodling, who was a Justice Department employee who's now been given immunity, so she'll be able to testify before Congress, who reportedly was hiring and firing based on one's party affiliation, which is in violation of rules and is now being investigated by the Justice Department. So it just keeps going. And I think that the point is very well made, as Bill just made, that this is all the more reason why it would seem the president would want to change the subject and ask the attorney general to leave.
It may indeed, but not yet, and no sign of it really yet. We've got other news to get to. I want to look for a moment at Jerry Falwell and his legacy. Of course, he died this week, 73 years old, founder of the Moral Majority. Controversial and colorful, he spoke his mind, as he did here, on homosexuality.
I believe that homosexuality is moral perversion. I think it is a violation of the laws of nature as well as the laws of God. I do not think that that gives me permission to be unkind or ungracious to a person who may be living a homosexual lifestyle.
Bill McKenzie, last words, last thoughts on Jerry Falwell and his legacy.
Was not a Falwell fan, wrote a zillion columns arguing why his brand of evangelicalism was misguided. However, the man did more than any religious leader since Martin Luther King to mobilize a group of voters. Democracy depends upon engaged citizens, so I'll give him credit for trying to bring a lot of people who'd been on the sidelines into the political process.
And Jack, what do you think as Jerry Falwell goes to his reward? He says, in that little quote there, that his views don't give him permission to be unkind or ungracious. But he could certainly be pugnacious at the very least.
And how does that add up? I mean, he says it's immoral, it's against the law, it's a perversion, but I don't want to be unkind. Well, I wonder what unkind would be like.
Yeah, there is that. Let's take a call from Erica in Sterling, Massachusetts. Erica, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to give a call. My brother is a Marine-trained interrogator and translator, and he's always been very emphatic that it was much more effective for most prisoners to give them a hot meal and a change of clothes to send them back home so they could speak well about the troops rather than something more Jack Bauerish.
Yeah, so one more voice from the military realm on whether or not to go hard. Erica, thanks for that. I want to look at Chrysler for a minute with all of you, if we could. Linda, great big American name now in the hands of a private equity company that's going to clearly want to make a bunch of money just as fast as they can here. Good thing, bad thing? How do you look at it?
New thing, because now we have one of our top three automakers that is going to go back to being a privately held company, something that hasn't happened in the auto industry in many, many years. And Cerberus is going to take over. That's the private equity company that has taken over Chrysler. The $18 billion health and pension obligations of the union, and that is the big elephant in the room here. What is going to happen to these enormous health benefit obligations that the auto companies have for these unions that they say add $1,500 to the price of every car? How they handle that, whether they shift it over to the union itself with a pile of money and say, handle this on your own, whether they try to cut the benefits, whether they lay people off, these are all the questions that everybody's going to be watching very closely.
And Jack, what do you think here? I mean, this is, as Linda said, this is a new dynamic, maybe not since Henry Ford had his own company.
Yeah, and you know, some people think that the publicly traded corporation today just can't make the sorts of investment in research and development and new products that a private company can make because, of course, quarterly dividend pressure and so on. So I could see that argument for it. And I note that the union president says that Tom Lasorda, who will be now the head of Chrysler, is a former worker himself. His family worked for Chrysler and so on. And maybe that's good. But, you know, finally, these big companies and the whole industry has to recognize their solution for the future is to lobby as hard as they can for national health insurance, to take that burden off their price.
And Bill McKenzie, we just got a minute here, but I guess my last question goes to you. You know Bush and his team well. They've got a ways to go here, and it looks like some awfully rough going. Paul Krugman today saying it's not just Bush, though. It's the GOP. What's on the line in the rest of this administration's time in office? Is it just Bush and his immediate team, or is the whole Republican Party kind of going to be on trial through the big question marks hanging there?
Well, if I were in Bush's shoes, I would tell Bush to be shooting for his legacy. They don't like to think that way, but I'd be fighting like mad to get this immigration compromise, an immigration compromise passed, to renew No Child Left Behind, which is going on right now between the administration and Ted Kennedy, and to try to have two or three of these domestic legacy issues that I can go home with.
Go to the light, even now, the word from Dallas. It's been great to have all of you here to look at a big week in the news. William McKenzie at the Dallas Morning News. Bill, it's always good to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Linda Douglas, wonderful to have you from Washington. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Jack Beatty, always good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.